Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in to the SFLC podcast. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Dependable Solutions, innovating the future of your small to medium-sized business since 2012. Learn how you can save 40 to 60% on your overall credit card processing bill by going to dependable-solutions.net. Again, that's dependable-solutions.net. Also, teststrips.com. That's teststrips with a Z.com. Managing diabetes is your business. Making it affordable is theirs. Sell your extra unused diabetes supplies for up to $50 per box and support a worthy cause. Rated a Better Business Bureau accredited A+ rating for over 5 years. Partnered with 98.5 The Sports Hub and affiliated with the American Diabetes Association. Make sure to check them out again. That is teststrips with a Z.com. Finally, we'd like to thank the UFC South Austin Gym, located at 9900 South Interstate 35 in Austin, Texas. Learn how you can get 3 free classes when you sign up and mention the SFLC podcast. Be sure to call them at 512-292-1900.
SFLC podcast.
All right, fight fans, welcome back to the SFLC podcast here in Chicago, Illinois. I am Ryan Spreggs, and of course, we had quite the weekend here for UFC 241 that was at the Honda Center. It was an excellent fight card. I'm sure everybody who's tuning in got to at least catch some of the highlight reels from there because there were plenty to choose from. But, you know, a lot of times we end up having people come on, and everybody who listens to the show knows that we've had writers from all walks of life, from Dwayne Finley to Damon Martin. We've had Mike Dice, who was the former editor of FanSided. We had Mike Heck, who helped me start this show, actually. Mike Pendleton, a lot of Mikes. I don't know. But it's always good to kind of bring in new people because we have new faces all over the place. And for those of you who tuned in to UFC 241, my next guest will have, you actually probably recognize her if you go back and look at that, be like, oh my God, that's right, that's her. As we have the current MMA editor for FanSided, Amy Kaplan. Amy, I'm so glad to have you on. Thank you for joining the show today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
So I know that you do a lot with MMA beyond UFC, and we'll get into that in a minute. But, you know, first things first, you and I were mentioning how we kept seeing you on TV because you were live covering UFC 241. And, you know, with as long as you've been covering this, this was probably the most attention that you've received while covering a live MMA event.
Notifications, and it was just crazy. I've never experienced it like that, and it was really cool. It was neat to like feel a part of it, and also to realize how many people recognized me. I was like, wow, people actually pay attention to me. I didn't realize that, so it felt nice.
And you know, another thing that people don't realize, and you've mentioned this on social media before, part of the reason that people may not see these events, even though you're there covering it, is not just the placement of where you are in the arena, but the fact that even if you are placed so close to ringside or to cage side, you're actually not spending a lot of time there, right? Like the true stories are in the bowels, in the locker rooms.
Yeah, so normally when I'm covering an event, I'm doing it by myself. So I'm posted at backstage where they bring the winners back so that I can interview them backstage. Because that's really where like the, you know, the content is that we want to get. And we can watch the fights from back there. And so normally I'm actually just back there, and it may just come out for the main card or even just the main event. But for 241, I had a helper with me, so I had him in the back. And so I was able to actually stay out and watch the entire fight card, which is rare. And oh my gosh, I'm glad I did, because that was one heck of a fight card.
And, you know, really from top to bottom. And, you know, there were a couple of things. And I had Blake Stevenson on my show last week where we were kind of breaking down the fight. And luckily for me, I'm pretty sure I called every fight correctly, which kind of sucks because you hear a lot of people say, wow, you might as well just go and start gambling on the sport. I have a big morality issue with that. I don't think that I'll ever actually put any wagers on any of these that go beyond like, hey, if I'm right, you're buying me my next round at the bar. So, and a quick question for you, because I would really like to get that. You know, we've always kind of heard, you know, you really shouldn't gamble on the sports. We know that they're starting to legalize sports betting, you know, kind of nationwide. But as somebody who covers the sport, you kind of get, you get that morality issue going against you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I did bet on a fight once when I first started getting into MMA. And some people don't realize that I actually was not a fan of the sport before I started covering it. I'd actually never even seen a single fight, even on TV, before I was kind of thrust into it. And so when I first started covering it, I was just doing photography. And so I bet on one fight just kind of for fun, and the spread was really big. And I wasn't writing anything, so I felt like, eh, I can do it. But now that I'm writing and I'm editing and I'm really a lot more into it, I definitely don't think I could ever bet on a fight. Not to mention I would just feel not just the moral and ethical part of it, but I just would feel bad. I mean, I just don't want to bet on, I mean, I know so many of these fighters now, I just would feel bad betting against anybody.
I actually, the last time I think I even put any sort of a little wager on this was with Mike Heck on the show when we saw Mickey Gall fight Sage Northcutt. And Mickey has been on the show a few times, and Mickey has always given his support to the SFLC podcast and MyMMAnews.com. But for some reason, I saw Sage Northcutt having the edge. So Mike Heck and I put a friendly little wager on it because I had a full head of hair, and Mike Heck will not grow his hair to save his life. So we kind of had this little wager that if Sage Northcutt won, that Mike was going to have to grow his hair out for a year. And if Mickey Gall won, I was going to have to shave my head. Well, we know how that went, and I don't look good with a shaved head, and I haven't since high school. So I kind of learned my lesson early. Well, before we get into that fight card and we kind of start talking about you a little bit, a couple things that we do want to make mention of. First things first was, I'm sure that you've gotten a lot of feedback from this, but if I can lend more feedback to this, you have actually gone through this transformation in your body and losing weight and getting, you know, kind of a fresh outtake on things. And first of all, congratulations, you know, to all the weight that you've lost. But, you know, give us a little backstory. What was kind of going through your head and, you know, How have things been different since this?
You know, it's kind of weird because some things have been a lot better and some things are kind of a little bit worse, which I think it's hard for people to kind of understand. I wanted to lose the weight for a lot of reasons. Health, obviously, confidence, and just being able to feel more comfortable in my job. It was really hard to hear a lot of people on Twitter say I shouldn't be writing about sports if I look the way I look. And I know that's stupid because it doesn't have any, you know, effect on how you write. But I did feel like, you know what, I should kind of get in shape and feel better about myself. That would just make me be able to kind of fend off those comments easier. But then you also, you know, when you lose that much weight and, you know, I'm the same person I was on the inside. I just look different on the outside. And so it is hard to sometimes be treated and to see how much better I'm treated just by general public for being a little bit skinnier. And it's hard to know that I spent my whole life when I could have been treated better. And it also kind of makes me feel bad about the way people look at overweight people, you know, and it's like subconscious, I think, that they just treat larger people differently. And it's, so it's a little different to kind of see that kind of feels a little bit bad because I, you know, like I said, I'm the same person that I was before, but I do get treated differently and I get treated better. And so that's a little hard. It's weird because it's catch 22 because I'm getting treated better and that's what I wanted. But then at the same time, I'm like, but I'm the same person. So it's tough. It's a little mind boggling.
Oh yeah. And you and I both agree, and we don't have to get any further into this, that, you know, anyone who's making comments like that to you really has no place anywhere here. You know, and it's just, it's awful that people would end up doing that. And I'm sorry that you went through that because it's just, there's no reason for that. You know, like you said, just because, I mean, I've never actually stepped into a cage and fought before, but I've never once had somebody say, hey, you can't report on this because you haven't done that. And if people have said that, I either A, haven't heard it, or B, someone else shut that argument down real fucking quick.
Right, and I think it's silly because anybody who says that, you know, I sometimes even fighters say it. They say, like, oh, you can't critique me because you've never done it. And I would like to just say to them, have they ever had a meal and said this meal tastes like crap? Did they go to culinary school? I mean, that's the whole point of opinions, is that there are opinions and our thoughts. And we don't have to necessarily have lived through it to have an opinion. Sure, their opinions are different, and a fighter would have a different opinion than a spectator, but it doesn't invalidate our opinion or our comments on it.
Absolutely. You know what? You bring up an interesting question. I didn't even think I would have to, you know, kind of discuss this, but since we're on the subject, we have heard some fighters make comments like that, especially in front of a live microphone. And, you know, we don't have to get into specifics, but we can if you'd like. You know, when you do hear fighters make comments like that, you know, what's your initial response as a journalist?
I mean, it's to kind of just laugh, because, like I said, it's like, you know, who goes to a movie and doesn't say afterwards if they thought the movie was good or bad? You know, and how many people have made a movie? You know, you don't say that to somebody who critiques a movie, because that's just life. I mean, that's what life is about, and you can't expect, you know, people to not have an opinion. And the thing is, too, is they're performing for an audience. So if they think their audience is not going to have an opinion about how they performed, that's silly, too. It's just wrong, you know?
Yeah, I'm hearing some horn honking in the background. Are you?
We're caught here in this person, it's LA traffic. So I am actually doing this interview driving in there's an overturned big rig here, and so people are trying to get around, and everyone thinks that, you know, they need to get somewhere faster. So that person was doing.
Yep, for those of you who don't know, when Amy and I sat down and kind of started talking about this, we found out that she was in standstill traffic because of a wreckage that's up ahead of her. So there's a chance that she can get around it before we get done with this interview. There's a chance that she might not. We don't know, yeah. But we're going to play this one by ear.
It'll be fun. This is the life of a reporter, always on the road, never at home, always on the go.
I understand. So, you know, we talked about how you started as a writer, you know, and you were writing about MMA, you know, kind of very new to your understanding of the sport of MMA. But prior to that, you've been writing, you've been doing photography, like you said, for LFA. So, I mean, how did you get into the business, I guess, for lack of a better term?
Well, actually, it's kind of embarrassing. I got into sport because I was trying to impress a guy that I liked who liked MMA. And so I was working at Entertainment News, and I said, oh, I'm going to get us some tickets to a fight, and we'll go, and I'll kind of use my media connections to get us good seats. And that's what I did. And then he ended up failing on me, like a lot of men do. And I went anyways, because I was curious. I wanted to see what it was about. I took my camera. I took some pictures while I was there. And I really, like, fell in love with it almost immediately. I came home from the fight, and I watched a couple documentaries about MMA. I was curious about what it was all about. And then I posted a couple of my photos, and the fighters started retweeting them. And actually, Tito Ortiz messaged me and was asking me for copies, and I realized that honking was not at me this time. I just realized, you know, I think I'm pretty good at this, and I just started photographing a lot more, and eventually some magazines wanted to run them, but they said, you know, we want some content with it, so I started writing to go along with my photography, and that's kind of where it went from there, and I just kind of left Entertainment News and just focused on MMA.
Now, have you completely left Entertainment News, or do you still dabble?
I would say completely left, because I was working full-time. Every now and again, I'll pop in and write something entertainment-related for Fansided, if it's just something I really am really passionate about. But I would say it's like once every 100 stories, I'll write something for entertainment.
Oh, my. Okay, yeah, you aren't kidding. That is quite a bit different. But I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and kind of jump into everything. You know, we just got done with UFC 241. We have a little bit of a break before UFC Fight Night, which is in China, which is going to be great for me because I have this weekend off because next weekend I think I'm either A, going to sleep really early, or B, staying up all night. And I don't know for the life of me which option is better to catch that fight card.
Same thing.
But, you know, you were there for all of 241. So before we get into the fights themselves, what kind of an atmosphere was there? Because we've seen everyone from Dana himself tweeting out saying how great the fight was. We've heard people who were at the fights who said, we almost wish that we had less fight cards so we could have these fight cards of this magnitude. What was it like for someone like you who's been covering this regularly for some time now? Now, you made the comment about how there were a lot of fighters there, and you and I have heard stories, and you can actually verify these. There are some fighters who were kind of jawing at each other the whole night, including one Colby Covington. Were you aware of this happening in real time? Yes.
And so that's, I mean, just to tell you the kind of attention that Colby gets. And I do know there was a lot of commotion. I couldn't really see I could see who was sitting there, but I couldn't tell who was saying what to who. But there was definitely, you know, a lot more security in that section. Dana White did say afterwards that the security asked him if they could move Colby somewhere else because he was just causing so many problems, or the people were causing problems. So, yeah, I mean, it was definitely something we all noticed, and the Colby chants did not stop. They happened three or four more times through the fight, and so, yeah, it was definitely obvious that something was going on with Colby over there.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that because, and we'll get into the actual fight before, you know, the Yoel Romero-Paul Acosta fight definitely got some mixed reviews after after Bruce Buffer had announced the winner from the judges. And I initially thought that there was a lot of booing from the audience because they thought that Romero beat Costa. But from what you're telling me, it almost sounds like these were still boos and crowd resentment with Colby being there. Is that correct?
I don't think so. I actually think at that point they were really booing for the winner just because of the timing of it and because at that point they kind of settled down with Colby. But yeah, I mean, I can't imagine anyone booing either. I mean, no matter who won that fight, whoever you believe won that fight, to boo whoever actually, I mean, that's just silly. That was one of the greatest fights on both fighters' behalf. I mean, it was impressive.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll bounce around on this card then for a little bit because there's a lot that we can go over. And we'll start with that middleweight fight where Paulo Costa wins in a three-round decision versus Yoel Romero. Again, there was mixed reactions from the crowd. I remember immediately going to social media after I saw it, and I scored the fight for Paulo Costa as well over Yoel Romero. And Mike Heck had made a comment about it on my post. And actually, even one of the MMA referees had posted about it, asking me how I scored the fight. Because he said, normally when I go to the judges, I ask them how they scored the fight. And apparently, he said, you're asking the wrong questions to be, which rounds did you score for which fighter? You know, in which case I said, you know, I gave Paulo Costa the first and the third round, and I gave Yoel the second round. And I think that that was kind of what ended up making that. Now, Amy, when you go back and you recap this fight, did you agree with the judges that Paulo Costa won that fight?
Well, I have to say that one of the things that a lot of people don't realize about, especially in my position as the editor, when I'm sitting cage side, I actually don't see a lot of the fight. I know that sounds crazy because I'm sitting right there, but I'm editing the piece from the fight before. I'm watching the recap or watching Twitter to see what's going on. I'm looking for highlights. And so I'm actually not seeing 100% of the fight. I'm watching when I have moments or I'm listening to the crowd. I'm watching the screen for replays and things like that. So I'm not the best person to say when it comes to scoring because I wasn't recapping that particular fight. So I wasn't paying 100% attention. But from the moments that I did see, I actually scored it for Romero. And so I was a little bit shocked when Paulo Costa won. But like I said, because I wasn't watching the whole fight, I'm not sure how accurate my opinion is. But I think that no matter what, it was so close that I'm not unhappy with either one having the win. You know what I mean? It was such a good fight. I'd love to see it again. I would love to see it five rounds. You know, I think no matter which one won, they both came out the winner, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I'll explain this to you because obviously I'm not just explaining it to you. I'm explaining it to everybody who's listening to this. A lot of people, you know, expected Yoel Romero to win this. You know, they expect to see Yoel Romero in a middleweight title contention again in the near future. But the point of all this is after this, Costa is 13-0 right now. And the reason I scored it for Costa was he seemed to dictate the pace of the fight more than Romero did. He seemed to be able to set up combinations better than Romero did, and it almost seemed like Romero was trying to hit home runs with every strike that he threw, and to the point where Romero would throw a strike so hard that even if it landed, he couldn't follow up with anything because he was falling down, throwing so much momentum forward.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think the reason that you got the reaction from the crowd that you did was it was so close going into the third round that if you didn't have this ideal standard of what you were looking for when breaking down a fight, you could easily have scored it either way. But if you looked at it thinking, you know, who controlled the center of the ring? Who was able to get out of trouble faster than the other? Who was able to set up combinations? Who kept their composure more? I think all of that goes to Costa over Romero.
And I think, too, when it comes to fans booing, is fans are booing out of emotion and not out of knowledge of scoring a fight. I think that people just have like somebody in their head that they want to win. And even if, you know, Romero had lost by a huge margin, they still would have booed because that's not who they wanted to win. So I don't even know that it was necessarily that they were booing at the judges or booing at the decision. It was more the fact that who they wanted to win didn't.
And that's probably the most accurate way to put that. And I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination, because this would make, you know, the sport so boring. I just, like you, I didn't always follow MMA, but I did always, you know, cover sports in some facet, either on the air or, you know, writing about it, either in print media or in digital media. So I think when I came into this, I didn't come into this sport as a fan. I came into it as a journalist and a reporter. So I didn't really look at having a dog in most of the fights that I was watching. I was just trying to gain an understanding of the sport, and from what I understood from the sport, that's why I scored it the way I did.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense too. Yeah, because you know, when you come into a sport, and you don't really have an opinion of who you want to win. It's a lot easier to be objective about what you're watching.
Absolutely, and I think that's what I really enjoy about this. Many a times have I had Blake Stevenson when I was down in Austin, Texas, sitting right next to me while we're watching, you know, any of the pay-per-view boxing matches that went on with Manny Pacquiao, or watching any of the fight nights on Saturday nights. And it was a lot easier for me to watch that, especially knowing there were people around me who were like, oh, I hate this asshole. I can't wait to watch him lose. And I'm watching the fight in real time, and I'm like, man, I hate to break it to you, but this guy that you want to lose, he's not losing this fight.
Right, yeah.
So you almost get to take emotion out of it and get to, like you said, look at it objectively. And that's where it may not make for the most exciting writing, but it does definitely make it a little bit more objective, like you said.
Right.
So, well, we at least covered that fight, but I do want to turn this one back over to you. You know, you were there for the entire thing, and outside of the main card, you know, we had some great fights on the prelim card. You know, Corey Sandhagen beating Rafael Assuncao, Jakar Close winning his fight, and I think that one was actually could have gone either way also. I want to throw it to you, Amy. Which fight that you actually got to watch were you most impressed by outside of the main event?
Jakar Close and Christos Gagos, for sure. I do have to say, going to be fully transparent, Christos and I go way back, and I've known him since before I even started covering MMA, and so I did pay a lot of attention to that fight because I was obviously interested in to see how he would perform, and I think he performed better than he has ever in the UFC, and to have that performance, I know he was really disappointed in himself, but I was so excited to see that fight. I actually tweeted that I thought it was Friday night, obviously before it got farther in the card, but I agree that Jakar Close is the winner of that fight. I think that slam was incredible. I actually also really appreciated the fact that it looked like Jakar slammed him in a safe way, if that makes sense. I think that he knew that he could have easily just slammed him and he could have really hurt him, but he kind of turned his body in a way that he was able to still slam him, but set him down on the canvas so that he wasn't right on his head. And so there were just moments in that fight that just, I mean, it was just so incredible. And the fact that the two of them are managed by the same person added a little bit of kind of drama there. And I know that there was a little bit of drama in the face-off and the weigh-in, and it was just really, I think that fight got slept because of everything that happened later, but I really think that that's a fight that people should go back and watch again, because I thought it was really incredible on both sides. It's another one where I feel like no matter who actually won, they both won. They both performed incredible.
Right. And, you know, I'm glad that you bring this up because, again, we're going to kind of bounce back and forth on topics. I've had this conversation several times that maybe in the future, MMA starts to look at certain movements that may be athletic, but might not be a martial art per se, like that body slam. We can go back to the Jared Brooks, Shorty Torres fight, where basically Jared Brooks knocked himself out. And, you know, I love having Shorty on the show. You know, he's a Chicago native, but I think that we could agree that prior to that, Jared Brooks was probably controlling that fight, and then you have that body slam and it went wrong, right? Mm-hmm. So, and at least, you know, in this fight, you know, we ended up seeing a very well-executed body slam, but in mixed martial arts, in your opinion, is that a movement that belongs in mixed martial arts?
But I mean, you know, you look at how Jakar did it. He, and actually there was a slam later by Stipe and DC. And both of those slams were done in ways that were entertaining to the crowd, effective in the fight. And I think that they definitely have a place. I don't think that should be banned or taken away.
Okay. I can appreciate that. I have heard people who would disagree with that, but it's good to actually get an opinion from somebody who is on the other side of that, because it seems like every time I'm talking about body slams in the UFC, I have people saying, you know what, it doesn't seem safe to me. I don't think that it's an MMA move, and I think that you end up getting a lot more damage out of it than you could getting a mixed martial art movement.
Well, I think that's true. I think that's true that it is dangerous, but I think that everything they're doing in there is dangerous. So it's like, where do you draw the line? You know what I mean? It's cage fighting. I guess I'm a little more brutal than I realized.
Look, you and I could go back and forth. You know, we remember when they outlawed that 12-6 elbow and how that kind of has affected fights in the past. You know, I would say, and this is probably just me as somebody who had two knee surgeries, that, you know, leg kicks don't belong anywhere below the kneecap or even at the kneecap, you know, because I think that at that point there's just so much damage that can be done to ligaments. And how many fighters and professional athletes do we know that have had setbacks in their career because of, you know, complex knee injuries?
Right. I guess I just feel like, and this is going to sound probably like I'm being heartless, but if you're worried about those kinds of injuries, then you shouldn't be fighting. Because I think that there are so many things that can happen in a fight. You can step wrong and your knee can pop out. I mean, I have knee injuries as well, and all I did was lock my knee. And so things happen. I mean, I feel like if you're the kind of person that's going to step into the cage and fight someone, then I think that those kinds of injuries are kind of part of the process. That's part of the game, you know?
Absolutely. And in fairness, the UFC has done, and mixed martial arts in general, has done great strides in making sure that the fighters are protected. You know, we even look at, and this was a factor in a fight this weekend, right? Where a fighter is fighting with his fingers pointed out, and it became a problem. So the referee stepped in and righted the wrong. We've had that 12-6 elbow that's been taken away. We understand what happens with groin shots, and, you know, no one is that malicious, I assure you, but... the accidents do happen, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, accidents will happen.
So, well, we kind of look at the prelim card, and again, we saw Dracar Close coming up with that very close decision. So I'm going to ask you, with his win, where does Dracar Close go in the lightweight division from there?
Where he lines up on the top 10, top 15, that kind of thing.
Currently what I'm seeing is he's unranked. So I'll reword the question, and I'll try to do this knowing that you don't have the rankings in front of you the same way that I do.
Right.
With a win like that, making him 11-1, and still from what I see has not cracked the top 15, is his next fight against a top 15 fighter?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So the other fight that I really wanted to talk with you about on the prelim card was the Rafael Sunsal Corey Sandhagen fight, which, you know, you really expected, well, I don't want to say really expected, but I guess I walked into this thinking that Rafael Sunsal was going to win this and he was going to be on his next bout as far as trying to get back into that title contention. But in steps Corey Sandhagen, man, he really controlled this fight, didn't he?
You know, I should have warned you before we started talking that this is one fight I did not watch. I actually left the arena to use the restroom. And one thing about this media row was that it was about 3 miles away from the nearest restroom, and you had to go up an elevator and around, so I missed a lot of this fight. But I did hear what you're saying. I do echo that. I think a lot of people are saying the same thing. I was actually surprised when I came back, saw the tail end of it. Yeah, I mean, I think that I think, you know, to be honest, that's part of the reason I went at that moment, because I was so sure of who would win that fight.
Yep. Well, we were all wrong. There you go. So, well, I'll tell you what. We're obviously, we know that Derek Brunson ended up defeating Ian Heinisch in the middleweight division. And, I mean, we can talk about that. But, you know, I really kind of want to get to the co-main and the main event, not so much to skip over fights, but to allow time for you and I to kind of get into the upcoming fight card that we have going on and talk a little bit more about some other news items that are happening in MMA. So are you fair with that?
It's totally fair.
Perfect. So, you know, of course, we ended up seeing the co-main event and maybe even, you know, the champions fight of the night. I think I coined Ariel Helwani appropriately there. Is that what he called it? The people's fight of the night?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't listen. I couldn't hear what he was saying, so.
Oh, I'm just using his, not this specific fight. I think I'm trying to coin his term correctly. The people's fight of the night?
Oh, yes. People's fight of the night.
with Nate Diaz winning in a 3-round decision over Anthony Pettis. And, you know, Nate Diaz had a couple of years off. Some people thought there was going to be ring rust. Anthony Showtime Pettis thought that this was really going to catapult him in the welterweight division, and we were going to end up seeing him kind of move up from this. But Nate Diaz comes in and kind of, you know, alters the plan here a little bit. And, you know, now you have to think Nate Diaz ends up winning that. I unfortunately wasn't able to hear what he was saying in his post-fight, but I could at least catch him mouthing motherfucker at least once, because you don't really miss that. But then we find out that he called out Jorge Masvidal, and it almost sounds like that's the perfect fight for Nate Diaz, or as far as probably the UFC is concerned for ratings, that would be a perfect fight. Amy, do you think that that's correct, or is Nate maybe one fight away from getting that Jorge Masvidal fight? Yeah, and I think you're right. And you know what? I'm glad that you mentioned that, Amy, because that's probably the most important aspect of making this a headline on a pay-per-view. Not that it needs to be for any sort of a belt, but because when you put these two in a ring, in a cage together, you don't want it to just go 3 rounds. You want to see those championship rounds.
Right, and oh my gosh, imagine the trash talk that would happen before that fight. I mean, it would be like a whole new vocabulary would be created. I mean, I could just imagine the things they would make up to say to each other. It would be like you'd need a thesaurus to go through the trash talk between the two of them.
That's true. And yes, you absolutely would need a thesaurus, because there are a lot of times that I don't understand everything that's coming out of Diaz's mouth.
Yeah, or Jorge Masvidal.
Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you, but there's someone who might disagree with you a little bit as far as the trash talking is concerned. And oh God, her name is slipping me now. She used to be a fighter.
The one that
Colby Covington called out on Luke Thomas's show.
Gina Carano?
No, not Gina Carano. Ah, you're gonna do this to me. Anyway, moving on. You mentioned the trash talking, and it's great for the fans, right? But there are certain people who aren't a fan of trash talking. Wow. Jesus. Okay. I hear you. Where would you see a limit being there? Because it's hard to limit trash talking, right?
Right. I think as long as the trash talking is centered around the person that's fighting, like, I don't believe that they should be trash talking each other's wives, trash talking each other's children, parents, things like that. And I don't believe, like, I really did not agree with what Colby Covington said about, now I'm drawing a blank. Matt Hughes. Yes, I think that was totally uncalled for. He had absolutely nothing to do with the fight. It was completely out of left field. Like, what's the point of bringing that guy up? Now, if you want to, and I'm not saying that people can't trash talk certain incidents, but I believe that it has to be in the right context. I believe that if it's between two fighters and they go up and they go to a third fighter that's not involved, then that's when it's done. You know, like, keep it between the two of you.
Right. And actually, the woman that I was talking about was Misha Tate.
Oh, yes, Misha Tate. Wow, I can't believe neither of us thought of that.
Yeah, it took me a minute. That's not exactly either of our proudest moments, but we move forward.
No.
But again, you I don't know if you remember hearing the diatribe that happened between Colby Covington and Misha Tate. And again, I'm not saying that I disagree with that, but I think that, you know, like you said, there has to be some sort of regulations, for lack of a better term, on what is and is not said. It's kind of like anyone who fights John Jones ever is going to make some comment about his past, right?
Right.
And some of that is warranted and some of it may not be. But then again, I also don't defend John Jones when he, you know, kind of shamed one of the female reporters for asking about the sample that was in his system. She did. And again, we all know that my background goes into sports journalism. And more often than not, I'm gonna agree with the journalist. And there's nothing different about this scenario. So just a little sidebar. And I know that it's in the world of MMA ancient at this point. How did you feel when a statement like that was made?
So that she was saying things very direct and in a way that seemed harsh because she wasn't understanding how she should be saying these things. And for him to just go off like that, it was totally inappropriate. I do have to give him credit, though. He sought her out at the post-fight press conference before he began it and apologized to her in public in front of everybody. So that, I do have to give him credit for that.
Wow, that is something I didn't hear until just now. So it's good to actually hear about that. Hey, thanks. Kind of going back, we went on a little tirade there. Nate Diaz absolutely fighting Jorge Masvidal. It sounds like that's what Dana White wants to do.
Yeah.
But on the opposite end, Anthony Showtime Pettis, you know, he's talking about making a highlight reel. He kind of gets stopped dead in his tracks by a formerly unranked opponent who had had almost a three-year hiatus from the ring. Where does this take Anthony Pettis now?
Pre-fight interview that he had been offered McGregor for MSG and he really wanted it, and I guess the fight never came to fruition. And I kind of feel like that is a good, I know a lot of people are going to say he doesn't deserve that fight, coming off a loss, but I think it's kind of perfect because Connor has been out for a while. I don't think Connor deserves, you know, like a title shot. I don't think he deserves a crazy big fight, but I think Pettis would be a good match for him at either 170 or 155. Either one would be great. And I just think that that would be a fight the fans would agree with. And I think it would make both, I mean, maybe it would make McGregor happy, but I feel like it would make Pettis happy. And I just, when he said that, I was like, I have to see this. So maybe that's just wishful thinking, but I kind of would like to see him with McGregor.
Well, and I think that part of it is most people would like to just see McGregor back in action in general, but, you know, anyone who tries to say, oh, you know, McGregor should get, you know, a higher up fight, and, you know, Anthony Pettis is coming off a loss. McGregor is 1-3 in his last four fights, if we count his match against Floyd Mayweather.
Right. So I think it's a perfect match. I don't think, you know, they're both coming off losses, but they're both big enough names that matching them together would make a lot of sense. And I think that a win from either one of them would be, you know, if McGregor beat Pettis, it would be kind of a telling fight. And I think the opposite way as well. I think it's not a gimme fight for either one of them.
Now, are you saying that you foresee McGregor coming back to the UFC?
I do. I actually think he's going to headline MSG.
And, you know, there have been reports out that said basically he's holding off until next pay-per-view. Because, like you said, if you think that he would be a great fight against Anthony Pettis, it means he'd have to fight at welterweight. Conversely, if we're waiting to see what happens with Khabib versus Dustin Poirier next month, then yeah, he's going to see what happens from that to see if he can get either a rematch against Khabib or a challenge for a lightweight title or whatever. So he kind of is going to be looking at, well, actually his people are going to be looking at what the best options are. So it's going to be a short amount of time after the fight with Khabib and Dustin next month that we'll hear if Conor's actually coming back or not.
I agree. And I think the fact that we already know that they were working on him for MSG or wanted him on MSG is kind of telling as well that they maybe want to put him. Because I know they're not going to do a Conor McGregor co-main. It just isn't going to happen. I think it should, but I think he's going to. And there's no headliner for MSG yet. So I feel like Conor would be a perfect fit for there.
All right, there you go. I think, as a matter of fact, the only person that I know is fighting in MSG right now is Derek Lewis, right?
No, there's also Dominic Reyes. Dominic Reyes, and I just saw his face on my head, and I can't think of who it is.
Well, hang on a minute. We'll both pull this up. So, No, I know that Derek Lewis has been booked for that against Blagoy Ivanov. And,
yes, and then there's another one.
And then Dominic Reyes is, it's not Glover Teixeira, is it? No.
I don't think so.
Anyway, but yeah, I mean, again, I think that, you know, right now the current fights, what we're getting at, ladies and gentlemen, is that the current fights that are on there are not necessarily your a main event style.
Correct. Even for just a fight night.
Right.
And we're not talking about a fight night. We're talking about pay-per-view at MSG. So it's got to be big. And the fact that they're holding it off, they've already announced 245 fights. You know, I think they're working on something big.
Right. So we will see what ends up coming from those. But again, in the interest of timeliness, we move right along. Main event. We all understand Stipe Miocic coming back, winning his belt back against Daniel Cormier in a knockout in round four. And it really seemed to be a tale of two fights with DC and Stipe, because Stipe really turned it on in the latter two rounds, but DC definitely seemed to control those first two rounds with controlling him and, you know, pinning Stipe against the cage and really taking the fight wherever he wanted it to go.
Yeah, I think that Stipe just realized he needed to wait for Daniel to kind of tire and then take his moment, and he did. And I think it was a little bit of a late stoppage. I was, from where I was sitting, I could see directly into Daniel's face, and I saw him go out at least, I'd have to watch it again, but I think three or four shots before it was finally stopped. It was pretty terrifying. But I think that it's, you know, going into this fight, I wasn't super excited about it. I was like, whatever. Either one wins, I'm fine with. You know, I like them both. Both of them are great champions. Both of them are good fighters, and I'd be happy with either one. There wasn't like I didn't feel like the tension or the rivalry. But now that they both won one each, now I want a third. And I never would have thought I would ever want a third. I want a third. And I'm like, why? Why do I want a trilogy?
You know, and that's something that I've argued countless times ad nauseum on this show, is just because we've seen trilogy fights in the past. I think we all have this mentality that every trilogy fight is going to end the same way that we saw with Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali, right?
Right.
And that's just not the way that it works in any combat sports realm in this day and age. And it's not that I dislike it. You know, a lot of people are saying that Conor McGregor really shouldn't retire until he gets that Diaz trilogy, but I don't think that we really need it. And my reasoning is Conor got slept in the second or third round in his first fight, and then his second round, he won in a decision. These are not convinced. This is a very convincing loss as opposed to a not very convincing win.
I agree. I don't need to see a third fight.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. But again, we saw Stipe retain the title. I believe the new polls came out, and DC has been dropped from the pound-for-pound number one coming off of this loss. And Amy, the biggest surprise to me from this fight, I actually called Stipe winning this. I knew that it wasn't that I didn't think DC had the ability to win. I just knew that we understand his contract is about up, and he doesn't plan on fighting up until, what, probably even next year, right? So he either goes out on top, but because I saw Stipe winning this fight, I was actually mildly convinced that Daniel Cormier was going to drop his gloves in the ring after it was announced that he lost.
I did too, actually. I really did. I thought that's why Joe was interviewing him.
I'm glad I'm not the only one. I saw that, and everybody thought that I had three heads when I made that statement. So it was just one of those things. I mean, and DC has been a great champion. And honestly, give the man a second to breathe and think about what he wants to do with his future. Because if he retired tomorrow, Amy, neither of us would be upset about it one bit. And none of us are going to think any differently or any less of him for doing it.
I agree. Totally agree.
So, and that's another, you know, we don't need a third fight against Jon Jones for Daniel Cormier. That fight doesn't need to happen.
I disagree. I wanted it at heavyweight. So, I mean, I guess I should say I don't think we need it, but I want it. Because you know what? I just really want DC to get that win. I think I don't know that he necessarily could. I'm not saying that he could at heavyweight. I'm just saying that I really want that for him. And I feel like that would be a great way for him to go out. It's not going to happen, especially now.
And we've heard Jon Jones say that he wants to stay at light heavyweight. People keep saying this, so I'll get your opinion on this, that because there's really nobody that's in the rankings currently for Jon Jones, unless you start getting into like Israel Adesanya, but then he has to move up, and there's a lot that goes into that. A lot of people think that he should move up and try and challenge for heavyweight, but I'll tell you what, let me pull out a hypothetical for you. Let's say that the UFC is able to put enough money to lure Jon Jones into heavyweight and he fights DC. If he beats DC at heavyweight, what more does Jon Jones, what more can Jon Jones do? At that point, I retire if I'm Jon Jones. Look, I just beat everyone you could ever throw at me, possibly. Now what?
Too. But I definitely,
And I'll agree with you, and mainly because one of the most cliched things to say in fight sports is Father Time is undefeated.
Right.
So does John Jones have an expiration date? Yeah, we kind of all do in that sort of Sylvia Plath sort of mental thought process. But again, we look at the fact that let's go through the light heavyweight rankings. Daniel Cormier, he's beaten. Thiago Santos, he beat. Anthony Smith, he beat. Alexander Gustafsson, he beat. I mean, we're looking at all of these fighters, and these are all your top five, six, seven fighters. And he's beaten all of them. So you have to keep John Jones active. And even if he only fights once a year, you do have to wonder what you can do to keep him active. Because if he loses, I think the only reason he loses is due to inactivity.
Well, I think that, you say Thiago Santos. I think that if Thiago Santos was healthy, we would have seen a different fight. I think I would love to see that fight again. Obviously, that's going to take time as well. But I think, like I said, Dominic is fighting in November. I think if he wins in spectacular fashion, especially maybe we could see a fight in January with him and Jones. I don't think a few months is going to be that bad. Even a year is going to be that bad. I mean, he sat out for suspension almost two, and he was fine coming back. So
true.
I don't know that inactivity is a good. We just saw with Diaz, he was out 3 years and it was fine. So I don't think inactivity is really an issue with guys at that level, anyways.
Okay, I will say this, and I kept reading stories about how Thiago Santos. With the extent of the damage to his leg, they're like, oh, he's out, until 2020. I'm like, have you guys seen how severe these knee injuries are? Thiago Santos is out until sometime mid-2021. He tore every ligament in his knee.
Yeah, I agree.
So for those who are thinking, Thiago Santos will be the next, one to challenge him, let's wait to see a healthy one. You're waiting 2 years for that, guys. I hate to be the one to burst your bubble.
Yeah, it's definitely not happening anytime soon. Jones is going to have to fight probably twice before he gets Thiago again. And we still would probably want Thiago to come back and fight somebody before he fights Jones again. So, yeah, it's going to be a while.
And everything kind of changes. And for those who like to see new blood challenging for titles, you have Stipe who kind of got his title back from Daniel Cormier. And you see the list of, for lack of a better term, killers that are in the heavyweight division. You have Francis Ngannou. You have JDS. You have Derek Lewis, who's fighting at Madison Square Garden. You have Curtis Blaydes, who's fighting next month in Abu Dhabi. So we'll see what happens with the heavyweight division. But moving forward, what is Stipe's next challenge? Or does he enjoy this for a little bit before he has to go and immediately defend the belt?
Not like there's like a huge clamoring of heavyweights that are knocking down the door. I think it would be good to kind of develop the heavyweight division a little bit. Let's kind of see who emerges, let them fight amongst themselves, so to speak, and kind of see what's there for him.
That makes sense. So we kind of put a pretty little bow around UFC 241. Except there's one thing I wanted to talk to you about, Amy, and I think that you'd be able to shed some light on this. Obviously, we have a week off, and then we end up seeing UFC Fight Night 157 in China, where Jessica Andrade puts her belt on the line against Weili Zhang. But in between those, you end up having UFC 241, which didn't really have a strong female presence. Most certainly not anywhere on the main card. It really wasn't there until you ended up getting to the early prelims. And then you have UFC 242 that's in Abu Dhabi, and there's a very small female presence there. You would kind of think that knowing that you were going to be in Abu Dhabi, because I don't know what's going to happen if you have so many female fighters fighting there, that you'd probably have more fighting at UFC 241. Because now we kind of have back-to-back pay-per-views that doesn't have a strong female fighter presence. What goes through your mind when you hear that?
I think, honestly, it's because if you think about the fight right before UFC 241 was headlined by women, and then you have the fight right after UFC 241 headlined by women, I just think that it's not... I guess I just didn't really even take notice that that it wasn't heavy on the female fights, because the two right before and after are two big main event fights for women. So I think maybe that had something to do with it. I think it's pretty common for there to be only maybe one or two female fights on a pay-per-view. It just didn't stand out to me as an issue, mostly because of those two kind of bookend fights right before and after.
Okay, so it's not something that you're looking at and saying, hey, let's see what we can do about this, right?
Yeah.
True, but in the same sense, is it a little baffling to you that UFC Fight Night, that's going to end up having a main event title defense, is not only not on pay-per-view, but it's in China at a very weird hour for us who are going to have to stay up and watch this damn thing?
Yeah, wanting to watch, so I think that may come into play a little bit with that decision. And I think too, I think it's a little tough because a lot of people in the U.S. don't really know who she is either women. They're not like big draws for the U.S. I think they're trying to focus on where the draws will be bigger, which would be China.
That actually makes sense. And again, as UFC wants to go global, you have to be able to put these fights in China and get a strong, you know, showing out of it. You have to put these fights in Abu Dhabi and get a strong showing out of it.
Right.
So that makes sense. And again, I'm not bashing the UFC by any stretch of the imagination. I just and there is, in fairness, only a few female divisions in the UFC as opposed to the several that exist for male weight class divisions.
Correct. Yeah.
So all right, I guess I won't really hate on that, but. Wow, we've really kind of gotten into this quite a bit, Amy, and I'm only going to keep you for a little while longer because there is this looming question, and we talked about him earlier. Oh my God, Conor McGregor, what the fuck are you doing? You punch an old man in the face, and a lot of people are saying because he wouldn't drink proper 12 whiskey. I don't know. Blake Stevenson may have wanted to try and punch me in the face because I wouldn't drink proper 12 whiskey, but I'm not drinking it because I dislike Conor. I'm drinking it because it's awful fucking whiskey.
You know, it's funny. I received a bottle of whiskey for free from their distributor. Just said, hey, check it out. And I don't drink, especially don't drink whiskey. So I just gave it to my mom. I said, here you go. You know, do what you want with it. And she made whiskey barbecue chicken for dinner on Sunday. And so we had a family dinner, my family, my niece, my brother, my sister-in-law, everybody came over, and I took a picture of it with a bottle, and I put it on Twitter, and I said, oh, look, it's like, you know, and I got so much hate from that bottle of whiskey, and I'm thinking, I didn't drink it, we cooked it, and I was actually worried that somebody might see it and be offended that we used it to cook, you know, it's like, it's not cooking whiskey, but oh my gosh, it was crazy, the amount of people that kind of had the backlash about me drinking that whiskey, or using that whiskey.
I mean, well, yeah, and that's the thing is, Conor is his best and worst enemy when it comes to his own fucking publicity.
Yeah.
Because we could talk for days about the stupid shit that he's been doing, but on the same token, we're all like, look, just stop your shenanigans and just get back into the ring already. But the second we say that, then we're like, well, what the hell do we think he's going to lose?
Right. I think, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm defending him at all because I don't think there's ever any right to hit someone ever for anything. But I also If you hit someone at a bar, you're a criminal. In Dublin, you're just an Irish guy. You know, no offense to the Irish people. But it's like, the culture is so different. And yes, what he did was horrible, and you should never hit someone, especially in a bar like that, like, when you're not, you know, it's just, it's wrong. But I also kind of understand why it happened, if that makes sense. Like, it's just, that's just kind of what people do. I mean, it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they're all drunk in a bar.
Fuck. I'm moving to Ireland. I don't have to worry about gun crime at all. What somebody pisses me off, all I just have to do is punch them.
Yeah, you know, I've heard in places like even in Canada and stuff, like just the way the laws are here in the US, they're so strict and everybody sues about everything. So people don't, like, you would never hit a person in the bar in America because, I mean, obviously it's wrong. But aside from that, it's like you're going to get arrested for assault and all this stuff. And I was like, in Ireland, if you do it, it's everyone just goes, oh, okay. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just different. It's a different kind of culture there, I guess. I don't know. It's still not right. I just want to make that very clear. It's still not right.
Shit. I also need to immediately retract my previous statement because I talk so much shit that I would immediately get punched in the face if I was in Dublin.
See, and that's the thing, too, is like in the United States, there's like this sense of security. Like, I can talk shit here because I probably won't get punched in the face. But if I, like you said, if you're in Dublin and you talk shit, like, you're going to get punched in the face.
Yeah, and it's not that, you know, again, there's this certain thing that happens, and Amy, you can even attest to this. We by no means are trained in combat sports. However, comma, we've been around this long enough that we've been asked, hey, do you want to take some kickboxing classes? Do you want to take some jiu-jitsu classes? You know, and you kind of, you know, boxing classes, and our like regimen for working out has changed a little bit, right? Like, I'm not going to the bench press anymore. I'm throwing on my 16-ounce gloves and I'm going to go and, you know, hit a heavy bag, or I'm going to go to a speed bag. So, you know, I sit here and think to myself, oh yeah, I'd get my ass kicked. But then I also think, wait a minute, would I really though?
Right. You never know. I just don't
want to
test that. I don't
want to
know.
Oh, neither do I. No. People ask me all the time when they, you know, find out, because yes, I will still train in certain mixed martial arts, but I won't fight. And everybody was like, oh, so you were a fighter? And I always just say, no, I'm too pretty to fight. And that's the easiest way to handle it.
Yes.
But anyway, I think that's really about it. But, you know, other than that, again, Amy, this has been a phenomenal time. We're right over an hour, but it seems like forever because I'm sure. Are you still on the interstate?
No.
Nice. And you have a Dodgers game to go to, so.
I do. Go Dodgers.
You know what? I have no problem saying that until, if everything plays out in MLB the way that I think it's going to, your Dodgers and my Yankees face each other in the postseason.
How amazing is that going to be, though? That's like an epic showdown.
That is. And then we're actually going to get to see the prelim of that showdown here in the next couple weeks, where the Yankees do travel to the West Coast to take on the Dodgers.
Well, we'll just have to see how they do.
And talk shit the entire time.
Exactly.
Perfect. Well, Amy, before we let you go, it has been a phenomenal time talking with you. But also, we want to let you kind of let everybody know where we can find you, other than seeing you on TV on the ESPN prelims, miss.
Well, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at PhotoAmy33. And I just created a brand new Facebook page, and that is Amy Kaplan MMA.
Excellent. You'll have to invite me to that to make sure that I don't end up losing you on social media.
Yeah, oh, you won't.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, Amy. We look forward to having you on the show. Anytime you want to come on and kind of give us your breakdown on the fights, we always like having, you know, the friendly faces on and always having the journalists on, because we kind of have this tight-knit little group, right? We all...
Yeah, we do.
We don't really compete against each other, per se. But we all will come together and have conversations like this.
Yeah, super fun. That's one thing I really admire about the MMA journalism community, is we're all very helpful with each other. You're right, it's not a competition between us.
Yeah, and maybe it's just because MMA is so new, we don't have to have that the same way that you have with basketball insiders and football insiders.
Totally.
Well, that's where we're going to leave it off. And ladies and gentlemen, that was Amy Kaplan. Of course, you can catch her, like you said, on Facebook, on her Twitter account, Instagram. But that's going to do it here for us here at the SFLC Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy the week off, because I'm sure to tell you that once September hits, we're hitting it running. And we'll still have our shows for you coming up later on the week. But thank you for tuning in to the SFLC Podcast. I'm Ryan Sprague. Enjoy your week, everybody. Peace.